This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Adam Ragusea. And now for a bit of poetry, Meghna, if you please.
Certainly, but my apologies if I screw up the meter on this. Under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. The smith, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands. And the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands.
That, listeners may recognize, is the opening stanza from The Village Blacksmith by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, first published in 1841. The blacksmith that it describes was Longfellow's neighbor in Cambridge, a guy named Dexter Pratt, whose house is still there and is very famous. It's often called the Blacksmith House. Meghna, do you know which one that is?
I think so, and I might be dating myself, but Brattle Street, Yellow House, used to have a high-rise bakery in it?
That's before my time, but big and yellow, green shutters. Yeah, that's the one. It is currently used by the Cambridge Center for Adult Education. Here's the executive director there, Susan Hartnett, as we heard earlier today on WBUR's Morning Edition.
There are four rooms, two up and two down. Very humble, very sweet. I love the scale of this house. Really precious.
Now, everybody knows about this house and its connection to Pratt and to Longfellow, but here is something that nobody knew until quite recently. After it was owned by the blacksmith Dexter Pratt, it came into the hands of a woman named Mary Walker, who was, incredibly, an escaped slave. This is something that blows the mind of Susan Hartnett.
The staircase is the original, the thought that she walked these very stairs.
So who was Mary Walker, and how did a runaway slave come to own such a prestigious address? Duke University history professor Sid Nathans uncovered this remarkable story over the course of a 23-year investigation, the results of which now comprise his new book, To Free a Family. Professor Nathans, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, the fact that she owned this house was completely unknown until you pieced it all together from these 70,000 pieces of paper that you went through. What you describe this as being a cold case at first. How did you get on Mary Walker's trail?
Well, Mary Walker had a letter published on her behalf in a 1970s book called The Black Family and Slavery and Freedom. And the book argued against the notion that slavery had destroyed the black family. And it was an appeal by a white man on behalf of Mary Walker, who'd left slavery but also left her family behind. And the letter chronicled her heartbreaking distress. It was the most moving letter I ever read, and I wanted to know more. Who was the writer? Who was Mary Walker? What happened to her children? Did she get them back? So it was a letter that hooked me.
So we'll get into that part of the story and how she comes to Harvard Square and all of that. But first, Mary Walker, where was she born? Where was she enslaved?
Mary Walker was born in 1818 in North Carolina, just above what is now Durham, North Carolina. And she was enslaved by the largest slave owners in the state, the Cameron family.
And how did she come to escape?
Mary Walker was a caretaker and a seamstress, and she was looking after the invalid daughter of her slave owner, who had a mysterious illness which took her and the owner to Philadelphia in the 1840s for medical care. Mary Walker accompanied them, and at the end of August 1848, after she and the owner got into a dispute, she realized that when she got back to North Carolina, he was going to send her to the Deep South. So she walked away from slavery in Philadelphia in 1848.
She literally just walked away in Philadelphia.
Yes, it was an undramatic departure if you think of it from the outside. If you think of it from the inside, she was leaving her family without a word. She was becoming a refugee. She was going to be a Southern woman of color in a large city. So there had to be quite a bit of inner drama.
Now, she's in the North at that point. Why does she not stay in Philadelphia? Why does she come up to Boston?
In 1850, the federal government passed a law called the Fugitive Slave Law, which made it illegal for anyone to help a fugitive slave, anyone to harbor a fugitive slave. And Philadelphia became a magnet for slave catchers. So she came to Boston, where the head of the Underground Railroad of Boston, Lewis Hayden, promised no one would ever reclaim a fugitive slave from Boston. It was the heart of abolitionism, and it was safer there. There was a cousin of this writer who wrote his Boston cousin and said, would you take in a fugitive slave? And Peter Leslie said he would. So that's why she came to Boston. She had a connection, and Boston was a safe haven.
What did she do for a living when she got here? I ask this because you know, the blacksmith house, it might be kind of a modest house by contemporary standards. It seems like a pretty fancy house, especially pretty fancy considering now that in the year 2012, an efficiency in that neighborhood goes for like $500,000. But it seems like a prestigious piece of property. What did she do as an escaped slave that was able to provide that kind of life for herself?
Well, she did two things. She was a seamstress, and she went from house to house measuring garments for men and for women and made some money there. She saved all her money. She was also the caretaker for the invalid daughter of the woman and her man who took her in, and so she made some money there. But that's not really the way she was able ultimately to acquire the blacksmith house. By that time, she got her family back. They were all making some money. But she was a person who cared for a woman who was ailing, who was moving into Alzheimer's. She also cared for another member of the family who was dying. And I think it was the family connection, the family obligation of those that she had cared for 20 years that allowed the family to respond to her appeal to help her buy this house. So it was really the White family that put the money down for the house. And I think she told them she'd pay them back. And I think in many ways she already had paid them, and they conveyed to her that she had already paid them in advance.
A very Boston story in that regard. How did Mary Walker come to get her children up from the Deep South?
She tried everything, and she tried everything with the help of both black and white allies. There were letters that were sent. There was two rescue attempts that were aborted. There was an indirect appeal on behalf of Mary Walker to that the 1859 letter made to ransom the children out, and none of that worked. In the end, it was a famous northern general who was with Sherman's army who knew her story, who was part of the occupying army in 1865, that moved into Raleigh. And within a couple of hours, he found those children. He now grown. He let them know that their mother was alive and well in Cambridge, a woman they hadn't seen or heard from in 17 years, and said, "She wants you back." And that summer, they came back.
That's an incredible story. We know that Mary isn't the only woman with a story like this in American history, a person who was separated from their family and in their search for freedom. What makes her story different, aside from her posh address?
Well, I think, in fact, her story is representative of thousands who escaped slavery. Mm. I mean, when you think about it, everybody who escaped slavery left somebody behind. Mary Walker, like many of them, had to operate under the radar to try to get them back. What I think makes her story distinctive is that we have an extraordinary record of it. These were New Englanders who wrote letters every day. These were New Englanders who kept journals. These were New Englanders who had no television, no Google, no email. So we have an extraordinary chronicle of both the pain that she went through and the price that she paid for her freedom, the remorse that she felt at the same time she felt release, and finally the numbers of people who were involved, from Frederick Douglass to Harriet Beecher Stowe to the people from Boston who helped her in trying to reclaim her family. So it's the richness of that story that I think makes her story distinctive.
Sid Nathan, you're going to be up in Boston later this week, Thursday. You're going to be speaking about your book, To Free a Family, in the blacksmith house in Cambridge. What's that going to be like for you?
Well, it's going to be an extraordinary experience. First, this is the moment at which the blacksmith's house is acknowledging a person who was lost to memory. Mary Walker's family lived there from 1870 to 1912, longer than the village blacksmith, longer than any other residence, longer than the high-rise bakery.
That's right.
And in the second place, descendants of Mary Walker are going to be there. So it will really be a reclamation of memory, both on the part of the house that she lived in and on part of the family.
That's thrilling. What do they think? What do her descendants think about the work that you've done?
Well, they bought more books than I have.
Sid Nathan,
it's been wonderful to have them embrace the story.
I'm sorry, Sid. We have to wrap up.
It's been wonderful.
That's wonderful. Sid Nathan is an emeritus professor of history at Duke University. He'll be speaking about his book at the Blacksmith Hill House, Cambridge, Thursday evening. More information on our website, radioboston.org. Thank you, Professor.
Thanks, Adam.
Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow on the show, more poetry. Boston's own former U.S. Poet Laureate Robert Pinsky performs with pianist Lawrence Hobgood.
More and more, I spend my days in the city, the great metropolis, where I can hope to glimpse great spirits as they cross the street, souls durable as the cockroach and the lungfish.
The poem jazz of Pinsky and Hobgood. That's tomorrow.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Jessica Alpert, Dan Mozzie, and Jason Breslow. Our interns are Annie Ropeek and Mira Sharma.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin. I'm Adam Ragusea. Anthony Brooks will be back tomorrow.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, so join us then for more Radio Boston.